Better than this, I don't know what I'm doing. I can't do this shit.
What's better than this? Guys being dudes here on the Draft Dudes podcast, presented by Locked On. It's Joe Marino and Kyle Krabs from the Draft Network, and we are your hosts here on this Monday edition of the show. We have two divisions left, Kyle, the AFC West and the NFC South. And today, we start the NFC South with the Carolina Panthers and the New Orleans Saints. Welcome.
Keep pounding, Joe.
Oh, yeah.
Keep pounding, baby. Now, listen, have you read the title of this room yet?
It says, "Are we there yet?"
Are we there yet? This series, it's been long. We've been very comprehensive. And I want to thank the fans of the AFC West and the NFC South for sticking with us. Because we're here. We're at the end of the line. This is the last week of this series. And then just like Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots, we're on to Cincinnati. We're on to 2020, Joe.
Yeah. Looking forward to it. I started peeping prospects last week.
Peeping. Who'd you peep?
Charles Snowden, edge rusher. Well, I guess he's like a hybrid type edge off-ball linebacker from Virginia. Believe it or not, that's the first guy I watched.
No, that doesn't surprise me at all that you're watching Virginia Cavaliers.
Hi, Sophie. The defense is fun, man. I've had so much fun with that defense. I didn't want to stop. So he popped. He's a true sophomore last year, and he popped so much when I was watching, you know, Bryce Hall and my weekly date with him. Wanted to get eyes on him. So
weekly date.
Yeah, man.
All right. Cool.
You had a weekly date with Brett Rypien last year. So, you know, you know how this goes.
Yeah, it's true. I'm not going to argue with you.
Sitting there, what is it, 10:30, you're ready to fire up Boise State and friggin'
Air Force. Yeah, I'm popping a Monster Energy drink and getting fired up to watch Boise State play Wyoming.
Right. Highlight of your day. Highlight of your day, sir.
I highly recommend you create time and watch Jerry Jeudy, though.
Oh, I heard he's pretty good.
Oh, yeah. My God.
He's insane. I think he's Mel Kiper's number one prospect.
I believe I saw that as well. He is a unicorn, though. Hmm. He had one rep. Who were they playing? They were playing Clemson. It was a Natty. And he put Mullen in a blender, and he must have banged off his vertical stem four different times. And just he had Mullen looking like he was on Dance Dance Revolution. Trying to stay with him. And it didn't work.
Kyle, speaking of unicorns, is there any unicorns in the finale of Game of Thrones?
There are not.
Oh, man.
There are no unicorns. Hate to be the bearer of bad news. A lot of people pissed off about this.
I can't wait to be pissed off in 65 more episodes.
No. I don't think you watched two more?
No, I'm just kidding. There's 10 in season one. So I just finished season one. So I have 63 more episodes.
63. Yeah. 63. So, the longer I go, the more I appreciate the way it ended. I think people were too emotionally attached to the specific characters and invested in like it ending a certain way. And, I think that once you apply logic and see the poetic justice behind all of it, it was fitting for the characters and what their stories were like and what they'd been through and who they are. So I think if I went back and watched from the beginning, I'd appreciate it even more. Now, you first time through, if you're going to get the shock value, you'll probably be upset a little bit.
Well, that's it, Kyle. I've watched 10 episodes, and if there's anything that 10 episodes of Game of Thrones has taught me, it's to not expect the happy ending. All right. So I don't know what happens here in 63 more episodes, but I know that whatever I want to happen, I'm already getting myself ready for that to not be the case because I've already had my heart broken. All right. Once in 10 episodes. By 63, I'm sure I'll be ready for this outcome.
Poor dead Ned.
my, well, look, maybe there's somebody. All right. Look, I've been like Barry Sanders on social media today and last night trying to avoid the Game of Thrones spoilers. So
the next 2 weeks, you need to just log on, say what you need to say and log back.
That's what I did today. And the Bills start OTAs today. So I'm trying to like stay somewhat engaged to find out what the hell's going on with that.
Nah, you got to read news stories. You can't be on social.
Well, I'm working on my juke moves have been good so far. So
you got to mute all those words too.
I don't have the rest of my life to spend muting words. So I have to rip through it quick. Yeah.
Should we rip through the first two teams in the NFC West or East or South? Fourth time's charm.
Let's do it. All right.
Panthers and Saints.
Panthers. You want honor, sir?
Keep pounding. No, it's your local team. You need to.
Yeah. Man, there's one part of me that loves this class, and there's one part of me that says, I'm not sure anyone on this draft class is going to help them. It's kind of a weird way to look at the draft. Obviously, the Brian Burns pick at number 16, getting who I thought was the best pass rusher in the class for a defense that wants to be more multiple. I couldn't love that anymore. You get him chances to play in space, get him chances to use those great traits to rush the passer. I think he's going to make a big-time impact on this new multifaceted defense for the Panthers. So starting off with on a positive note with that pick was one of the steals, maybe the biggest steal of the first round, in my opinion.
Keep pounding, Joe. Good analysis here. Agree with you wholehearted. Now, when I weighed the pick value versus the rank value against the trade, the old Jimmy Johnson trade value chart, the Brian Burns pick was the third best value in the entire draft, getting my number two player at 16. So I think Carolina didn't make this harder than it has to be. You know, you think about some of the defensive ends that they've had in years past in recent history, and I understand that they've had a general manager change within the past couple of years. So we're willing to break some of the trends and the rules that you could apply to rosters of years past. They like guys a little thicker than Brian Burns, didn't they?
Oh,
under
yeah.
Dave Gettleman.
Of course they do.
So this is kind of a fresh approach to pass rushers for fans in Carolina, and I think it's a home run. Now you move beyond that. Carolina managed to get two more top 100 players for me. They got my 99th rated player in Will Greer at pick 100, which is a good value there, right where it should be. And they got Christian Miller, my 85th rated player at 115. Both of those guys for me were third round values. So Greer, I get where you're coming from, especially when you say, I don't know if that's a pick that's going to help this team right now, right? Like the Cam Newton shoulder situation is something to monitor, but from what I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, you're the local guy, they're pretty optimistic about the shoulder for 2019.
Yep.
So a top 100 pick that probably could have been afforded to go somewhere else if they you wanted to try and get back into the arms race here in the NFC South. But I like the pass rush duo for sure of Burns and Christian Miller, Joe.
Well, and that's the thing about the Greer pick is as I like the Greer pick, right? So because the Carolina Panthers have not drafted a quarterback at all since Cam Newton in 2011. So they haven't even given themselves that opportunity to develop a guy and see what they have and potentially make a trade or make sure that there's, you know, a quality guy behind Cam. I know that they kind of got used to having Derek Anderson in that role. But this past year, I mean, it was game over when Cam was no longer able to throw a football. season was over, right? That was it. And
Taylor Heineke.
Oh gosh. Yeah. So, I mean, hopefully this gives them a true option behind Cam. If he were to not be healthy or, you know, look, if Cam just can't get his health right, to have some type of a plan in place. So I was on board with that, but like, look at this draft, right? Love the Burns pick, already went through that. Greg Little, I don't think he's a starting left tackle in the NFL. And I wrote about that in my Panthers draft mulligan for thedraftnetwork.com. I just don't see a viable starter there. He's going to need time. And this isn't a team with time. Ron Rivera's coaching for his life this year, right? Not only does he need to give the Panthers a winning season, he needs to convince Dave Tepper, their new owner, that he can win for consistently moving forward, because that trigger was, it sounded like last year they were ready to move on if Mike Tomlin was available. And if Ron Rivera doesn't prove this year that he can be a consistent winner, then he's not going to be coaching beyond this year. And so Greg Little, I don't think at a minimum, maybe he will be a good left tackle in time. I don't see it happening in 2020. Greg Will Greer, backup quarterback. Christian Miller, love the talent, five-star recruit, super talented, always hurt. Jordan Scarlett, one of the worst picks in the entire draft. Dennis Daly, depth offensive tackle. And I don't know if there's a course to Terry Godwin sticking on this roster. So when you look at this class in totality, there's a reasonable case to be made that outside of the Brian Burns pick, there's no impact from this class at all this year.
I mean, you're obviously banking on Greg Little giving you something.
100%.
He picked him 37.
Yeah.
Now they lost Khalil, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, at the absolute worst, is Greg an upgrade over Matt Khalil?
Well, I mean,
I think so.
Of course, they got by with like this mix of Taylor Moton and Chris Clark last year at left tackle. Not ideal, right? The investment needed to be made. And somebody made a good point to me on Twitter. They said, hey, look, at a minimum, Greg Little gives them a guy that's actual, like a guy that can play left tackle. Because in an ideal world, Darrell Williams is a right tackle and Taylor Moton's a right tackle. And at a minimum, Taylor Moton can maybe be that left guard where they have a hole. Right. You play him at guard, but now you need Greg Little to be that dude, right? And body control issues, lack of range, his base is just ridiculously wide. I just don't like the way he moves. I don't like his body control. And all right, well, go block the best pass rushers in the world. I don't know. I have questions about that right now.
Well, the good news is he gets to block Marcus Davenport twice a year. So.
Oh, gosh, Kyle.
I'll say this. Looking at the depth chart, yeah. Taylor Moton needs to play left guard.
Greg Van Roten ain't it at left guard, I'll tell you that.
Because, I mean, if Greg Little can give you an upgrade over what you had at left tackle last year at all, and then you got Moton inside at guard, I think he's better suited for guard.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you still have Darrell Williams' one-year deal, right? He's kind of on a prove-it deal because he got hurt last year.
Yep.
They signed Max Paradis, which is a great signing for them, and then Trey Turner, right guard. Like, you got a pretty solid front five if Greg Little can be an average starter for you.
That's
and I feel
concern.
Like that's what you're banking on.
Yeah. You're concerned about it too. I mean, I get the optimism.
I am, but I'm sitting here saying, like, you picked him 37. That's the expectation, like, right away.
And they traded up to get him.
That has to be the expectation. Yep.
Yeah, have to.
So I think that Greg Little – I agree with you in that. I think the Greg Little pick will define this class because you expect Burns to start. I expect Burns to flourish in the NFL. I think he'll be fine. I think he'll be a very impactful pass rusher. But if you walk away – from this draft class and you get one starter, it's a bad class, period.
If there's one of these day three picks that you would say you can get behind it, which one do you like?
Jordan Scarlett.
Oh, my God.
No, I'm just kidding. I just wanted to trigger
you. You did it successfully, too.
Yeah, Scarlett was my 275th ranked player.
Oh,
154. Okay. Yeah. Kind of polar opposite of what you need there, right? I mean, dude's just a downhill hammer, run angry type guy, is going to have a very small, segmented, specified piece of the playbook versus what you're going to run with Christian McCaffrey. And they got a better running back in Elijah Holyfield as a UDFA. Oh, so
a million times better running back.
Yikes. All right. So, I think Dennis Daly was appropriate value. I had him 207. He went 212. The guy that can play inside, I think he's physically limited, but each and every year you see guys that are a little physically limited come into the league and they kind of meet your size thresholds and your functional strength thresholds. And if you can play forward, you can at least make a positive impact in some areas of the game. And it's easier. And Carolina has done this in the past when Darrell Williams was developing as a player to kind of protect a player who might struggle a little bit in pass protection. And sure, you make some concessions with your passing offense when you have to keep a tight end in, or you have to bring the backs to that side to chip and then slide protection away from that player. But I think Dennis Daly is a backup offensive tackle in the sixth round. Maybe you want to try him inside because he doesn't have great movement skills in space. I had no issues with that pick. I think that was appropriate value. And I like the fact that we're doubling down on offensive tackle. So I like the idea behind the pick too.
Terry Godwin was kind of interesting to me because to me, Terry Godwin, his course of staying on the roster is being a starting slot, right? Because I don't think he has a skill set
that
not going to be able to do it, right? So
hell no.
In front of him on the depth chart, DJ Moore, Jarris Wright, Chris Hogan, Torrey Smith, Curtis Samuel.
That's the five rosterable wide
receivers. Right. So, I mean, unless they go thin somewhere else, you know, I you stash him on the practice squad and he's an insurance policy. But, you know, I like him as a potential slot. But with this group of receivers, it was interesting to me. The daily pick, I kind of can get behind, like you mentioned there in the late rounds there. Maybe some inside-outside flexibility, but he's a physical dude, right? There's no questions about his power and his ability to move bodies on the line of scrimmage. So you get a utility blocker. Maybe he can be the successor to Darrell Williams. Maybe he can play guard. I just think it gives you some options. So he was probably my favorite day three pick for Carolina, not including Christian Miller.
Great minds think alike.
Who day?
Saints? Saints?
Is it who day or who dat? You know, I can never remember.
Who dat?
Who dat nation?
Yeah. Who dat say they're going to beat them Saints?
Is that how you remember it all the time?
Yes, I sing the jingle.
Okay, and who day is the Bengals?
Yeah, who day is the Bengals?
All right.
Fun fact about the New Orleans Saints 5-player draft class that had one pick in the first 2 days. They somehow managed to draft two of my top 20 players in this year's class.
Two of my top 22, man.
Yeah, it's crazy. So they got Eric McCoy, my 19th rated player at 48, traded up from 62 with the Miami Dolphins. Thank you very much. That led Josh Rosen. And then a 105, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, safety, nickel, flex, hybrid, whatever you want to call him, was a top 20 player for me as well. They got him at 105. And did we ever have any definitive evidence as to what caused this slide?
I heard the one thing that I saw on Twitter was somebody reputable had said that he was not impressive in team meetings, right? And I think he went on like 30 or 31 of them where he kind of went in there with an arrogance about him. And another person that I spoke to said the NFL doesn't forget about bad tape and 2017 wasn't good. Those are two answers I got when I tried to figure this out.
Now, I think that's fair. His tape in 2017 was shit.
Right.
Couldn't tackle to save his life, but he got a lot better.
Yeah.
Like a lot better as a tackler. And he's got really nice click and close. I actually thought he was a better athlete than what he tested too. So maybe that kind of, you know, all of these things pooling together was a catalyst for him to slide a little bit, but yeah. 16th rated player at 105, terrific overall value with their top two picks. Their top two picks at 48 and 105 in this year's class. A really nice job for the Saints.
Yeah, I mean, and this is, to me, this is a redeeming draft because it's well documented what I thought about what they did last year. I gave them an F, and Saints, who dat nation, came at me pretty hard. And, you know, they really didn't get great contributions from that rookie class last year. But for them to come away with, you know, two players that you and I both have within our top 25 for me, top 20 for you, holy crap. And not picking, you know, until 48 and 105 are your top two picks, and you get
traded up to get to 48. You originally were going to pick till 62.
Jesus, man. 16, they get my 16 and 22 prospect. I mean, that's two first rounders. They got two first round talents that didn't have a first round pick. I mean, I don't care what you did the rest of the way. I really don't. That is an absolutely masterful job, especially with the needs that those players fill with the Max Unger retirement. For them to be able to snag Eric McCoy, who is a plug-and-play center. And they gave some money to friggin' Nick Easton to be that guy, and that was never a good idea. So center is so important, you know, especially for an offense where timing is so critical with Drew Brees and all that he's able to do, making sure that glue piece on the interior is there to take care of the protection, and that way Drew Brees can focus on the secondary. I thought that was masterful, and every defense needs a player like Chauncey Gardner-Johnson that can play low safety, high safety, big slot, tackle, quick trigger downhill. I mean, to me, this was just a masterful job from the Saints, who I thought were incredible in 2017. They took a dump in 2018, and hey, this was a hell of a job in 2019.
Yeah. You look at the rest of the class, they had Saquon Hampton, defensive back from Rutgers at 177, Elise Mack at 231, and Caden Ellis, who actually played both ways at Idaho. Really fun tape at 244. Lees Mack actually snuck into my top 100 players as well. So they got three top 100 players, two top 20 players, and had one pick in the top 100 picks. Somehow managed to pull it off. But their other two players, Saquon Hampton and Caden Ellis, for me, even though they're fun tape, it's not necessarily promising tape. I think Ellis is a good athlete, but he's got a lot of development ahead of him. He's going to play linebacker at the next level. Saquon Hampton kind of banged up throughout the course of his career at Rutgers and not really impressive from an athletic profile that he presents to. So those two guys for me, I gave UDFA grades to. So the Saints either hit home runs with their picks or they pick guys that I would have rather have seen go undrafted and target later. But like you said, when you get that kind of value early, or you get that kind of value late, I guess, when you're considering they picked 48 and 105, and even Elise Mack at 231, I really like his potential as a receiving tight end on this roster. I think you have to get excited about the class as a whole. This scored as the best value draft class for me in the 2019 NFL draft versus my own personal evaluations of the players, just because they got incredible value with three of their picks.
And if there's a spot, you know, I had my reservations about Alizé Mack, which we debated heavily in the battle of the boards. If there's a spot for him to flourish, right? Like, it's here.
Yeah.
This is the spot. And I know they brought in Jared Cook.
Great guy to learn with behind Jared Cook.
Very similar type strengths and weaknesses coming out. So I don't know how long Drew Brees is going to be the quarterback and how much, you know, he'll be able to hook up with Mack. But I mean, you can cause some problems here with some of the size speed combinations you can put on the field at the same time and really stress defenses in a lot of ways. So like that pick there later on.
Is this a Super Bowl roster?
Yeah, it is. I've been thinking a lot about my Super Bowl picks because I know everyone just is in pins and needles wondering who Joe Marino predicts for the Super Bowl. And I am having a hard time moving away from New Orleans from this conference, especially a team that's hungry, pissed off as hell, coming off last year with the way that they got hosed. This is a good football team. It's great coaching and a Hall of Fame quarterback. I don't know if you can point to another team and convince me that that New Orleans shouldn't be your pick for the NFC.
Listen, this defense is rock solid too. You know, we talk about the offense, but a defensive depth chart with Cam Jordan, Sheldon Rankins, Malcolm Brown, Marcus Davenport, AJ Klein, Alex Anzalone, DeMario Davis, Von Bell, Marcus Williams, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, Marshawn Lattimore, Eli Apple, PJ Watt, like really good. Patrick Robinson's on this roster. Ken Crawley's not a bad football player. They got talent. They got a lot of talent on both sides of the football. And I'm kind of with you, man. I like what a lot of teams in the NFC did. I like what the Eagles did. I did like what the Cowboys did. Cowboys are kind of in that winning window right now. I like some of what Seattle did. I think the Rams had a decent class.
What do you think about Green Bay? I mean, is Green Bay the – you know, I'm always – this Aaron Rodgers thing inside of me is always going to have me pushing in that direction.
Right. I mean, you can't write them off.
No.
No question.
No. They got better.
You got Aaron Rodgers. Yeah. It's – I think for them, it's like how quickly can you get the chemistry with the new coaching staff?
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
I think that's
– If Wentz is going to be the Wentz we saw at the beginning of 2017, that team's freaking good. All about who's going to play the Patriots in the Super Bowl, right? Or the Chargers? No. Or the Chargers?
Nope. Colts.
Colts. Okay. Man, it's freaking May. We can't be getting this excited yet.
I wrote Studs and Duds today at draftnetwork.com, and I kind of just overviewed the Colts as a team and what they were able to do this offseason. And, you know, it might not be 2019 that they get it done, but they're set up in a really, really good spot.
Especially now with Swag Kelly.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, game changer, right?
Jim Kelly's pulling some strings, brother. He convinced John Elway to draft this bum, and somehow his backup quarterback, Frank Reich, is committing a spot on his 90 to Chad Kelly with his track record. I'll tell you.
I know.
Anybody will do things for Jim Kelly, and I guess I don't blame him, but my God.
It's all about who you know. That's what they say about getting in the league. I think that's going to do it, Joe. Any parting thoughts?
You know, well, you better wrap because I'm going off the rails here with random talking points and Got a long summer ahead of us.
When are you starting season two of Game of Thrones?
Well, I wanted to last night while everyone was enjoying the finale, but the shared Hulu account that I'm using, they were watching the finale and I didn't feel it was appropriate to bump them. So hopefully me and the missus will get to work tonight.
Okay, it sounds good. I look forward to the updates. Shoot, I might start over. I don't know what to do with my Sunday nights now.
Well, I went ahead and ordered the book set so that I'm in good shape for when it's over. I'm not going to be
monster.
Like you. Yeah,
man. Ready to go, man.
I'm ready.
Might just go through Rick and Morty again.
No, dude, that show's terrible.
No, how dare you? You watched one episode.
It was the worst 20 minutes of my life. I got to be honest with you. That was terrible.
I'm sorry you feel that way.
I can't believe you like it.
It's funny as hell. I'm not going to argue with you in a formal like bet capacity, though.
It's not for me. Jermaine Pratt. No. This is not for me.
More people would probably side with you than side with me. I have a very juvenile sense of humor.
That'd be a tough table for you to pound and like get supporters for, the Rick and Morty table.
No, they got like a really loyal following, but it's small. So
it's like me and Nacho Libre. I get it. I know what you're talking about. A lot of people think that movie is so stupid, and I think it's pure gold.
See, just agree to disagree.
Yeah.
Folks, come on back tomorrow for Takes on Takes. I might drop a Rick and Morty take on Joe for Takes on Takes. I don't know. But you can drop your takes on us. I'm at Grinding the Tape. Joe is at the Joe Marino. Swing it over to draftnetwork.com and catch up some of our latest and greatest. We got great content up. Even though it's the quote-unquote off season, it's always draft season at the Draft Network. Thanks as always for listening to the Draft Dudes podcast.